Okay, we're going to go ahead and start our class this morning, so thank you for being here. We're going to continue with our study of the Book of Revelation. We're going to take just a couple minutes at the beginning of class to take a note of the highlights from chapter 6 and 7, and then we'll get into chapter 8 and 9 today. These section of Revelation from chapter 6 through chapter 11 is a picture of the world as it is and the reality of the world, the things that really matter about the way the world is. So what we'll look at is, last week we talked about the way the world is, protected by the Lamb, and then this week we're going to see a different set of images that make some of the same points. They will show the things that we see in the world from a little different perspective. Last time we looked at the seals as they were open. Six seals were unopened and six horrible things that were unleashed on the world. We're still waiting, of course, for the seventh seal, aren't we? We'll find out what that is in just a moment. But then we have immediately upon that, followed by the trumpets. The seven trumpets are shown when they are blown to a different set of announcements that is kind of parallel to that too. So we'll take a look at that. We're going to have some of the trumpets. We're going to see the end of the seventh seal, and we'll pick up for where to go. Steve is going to lead us in a time of prayer, and then we'll be ready to start.
Lord, we're so grateful to be able to call you Father on this bright and beautiful day, with the sun reminding us of the warmth and the love that you have for each and every one of us. Lord, we pray that as we experience your love, we'll open our hearts to you. Open our hearts in a way that we can absorb, not just absorb your word and your love and your grace, but to live it as you would have us to live it, to share it as you would have us to share it. Lord, we pray that you will bless Mark as he shares your word with us, a challenging book in the Book of Revelation. Help us, Lord, to see your purpose, your love, and your grace in that book. In Christ's name, amen.
Okay, thanks. Okay. Chapter 6, we saw the dangers that exist in this world. We read the account of the seals being opened and unleashing these four horses of the apocalypse, as they are called. Now, when the seals are opened, what is the meaning of a seal being opened? What is the significance of that? Not thinking about its contents, but what does that symbolism of a seal being opened suggest to us? And that kind of a seal in that context, it's not a pinniped, it's something different.
Like a revealing of a secret of something that's sealed up, you don't know what's there, but when the seal's broken, then everyone knows what's...
Yeah. That's what it is, a revealing, a opening up of something that you already knew was there, but you didn't realize it. That idea of revealing is parallel to the title of the book of Revelation. Revelation in Greek is apocalypsis. Now, apocalypse in English means what? Some bizarre, horror disaster. But that's not what the word means in Greek. Apocalypsis in Greek means revealing. That's all it means. That's all the title of the book was. Things that are being revealed. And things that are being revealed, not in the sense of secrets, but in the myth of, or the sense of revealing the sense behind the things you're seeing. So the world as it is, we are reminded that this is the way the world is. And we see when these horses are released, remember the word was spoken to them as they came out of the seals? Come. Now, was that because God was upset with us down here and deliberately wanted to inflict violence and hatred and oppression on us? Is that why we're being kind of whipped into shape by that? Why did he let those into the world? Well, he let them into the world when he put something else in the world. Us. That's where they came, because it's part of our nature. It's part of human nature, even though we were created in God's image. We carry that side of our nature. We carry that side of who we are. And we have to struggle with that to overcome the sins and self that we have in us. Well, chapter 7, we saw that we're protected by the Lamb. The Lamb of Jesus was given to us to release us from the captivity of sin. And we were sealed with God's Spirit. The imagery we saw last time, the 144,000 people were sealed with the seal of God's Spirit, the seal of the living God. And they are not necessarily going to be protected from danger, but they will be protected by the Spirit of God. What will He protect us from? Essentially, all spiritual struggle, right? The spiritual threats that we have. You remember what the scripture last week called that? It used a phrase that is also used in a wrong context by people think of the book of Revelation. It says, the people have been come out of something to be sealed by the living Spirit of God. The people in heaven told John, these people have been just come out of what? The Great Tribulation. That's the great tribulation of life, is our struggle with sin, our struggle with ourself. And God is the only one who can release us from that. So we are protected now, from now on, from anything that would take us away from God. As Jesus said in John 10, no one can snatch you away from me because you know something. Remember what the metaphor uses? Because you know my voice. Because you know my voice, you're not going to ever be snatched away from me, because hear my call. You hear what I'm saying to you. Okay, well, let's go ahead and let's open up with Revelation chapter 8. And we can read the first few verses of this. We're going to finally see the seventh seal, and when we will immediately be confronted with the trumpets will appear on the scene. Jen, could you read that? Just go ahead and read first six verses for us.
Okay. When he opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about half an hour. I saw the seven angels who stand before God, and seven trumpets were given to them. Another angel who had a golden censer came and stood at the altar. He was given much incense to offer, with the prayers of all of God's people, on the golden altar in front of the throne. The smoke of the incense, together with the prayers of God's people, went up before God from the angel's hand. Then the angel took the censer, filled it with fire from the altar, and hurled it on the earth. And there came peals of thunder, rumblings, flashes of lightning, and an earthquake. Then the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared to sound them.
Okay, thanks. And this will kind of make something of a transition between the seals and the trumpets are going to appear. But where it starts, we finally see this seventh seal that is open. The seventh seal was in succession, you remember, to six seals that all unleashed horrible things. But now the seventh seal, instead, it has something very different. Instead of all the noise and turmoil that the first six seals opened up, this one releases silence. And it's silence where? In heaven. It calls everyone in heaven to deep, profound calm. Just take it slow now. Now, there's some basic symbolism, if you think about it, because there's a parallel between the creation of the earth. After 6 days of creating things, what did God do in the seventh day? He rested. He was completely calm, completely quiet. And, of course, that's just a metaphor for God taking a rest. Well, now, when you look at this, it's something, it has a deeper meaning than that, though. It's not just God taking a little bit of a rest from sending all these things down here. It's a different meaning, because this is God now taking a pause. If you think about this, if you have all this stuff going on, and now God is looking down, you remember back in chapter 6, we read how He hears the pleas of the faithful to Him, asking for relief, asking for salvation. Well, now God is looking all that has happened out there, and He pauses. He just stops. Think of what does that mean? What would that suggest to you? What is God doing, metaphorically? What is God doing by pausing, stopping? What is he giving his attention to? You can peek at verses 3 to 5 because that will help you out a bit. What is so important to God? What is important to God of everything else that he can deal with?
To hear our prayers, kind of let things play out and for us to come to him and look at him. And
that's right. Yeah, he is ready to listen to our prayers. He wants to hear what we're saying, what we're calling out to him. And think about, Jen, you said that he's taking time out to listen to prayers. Now, would that mean
for
because
us
he...
us to come to him kind of stuff, for
sure.
Us to decide to seek him. And
that's right.
For people to come to love him. And
that's right. And because he's giving us a half hour, which in heaven can last a long time. He's going to wait as long as he need to. And now, that's a very good point. Now, think about the other side of it now, because that's what he's calling for from us, is please... Please call me. Please come to me. But then, what does it say then about God that he's going to sit there? What does it say about his feelings toward us and our cries to him?
Well, I think he's gonna wait and be patient for us to do that. And then, because he wants us to freely come to him. And so he's going to give us that chance. But it also says something about his personality. His nature is time to us is time, but to him it's not. I think it does both. It says something about his nature, and it says something about what he wants us to do. And there are times where we just need to be still and kind of take time out and not act and run around and do things.
That's a pretty good lesson for us to settle down a little bit and get away from all the things going on in the world, because that's what he's offering us. And he is very patient with us, waiting for us to stop scurrying around and coming to attention.
I was thinking, if you're in a room full of confusion and noise, and all of a sudden there's complete silence, it gets your attention. He wants our attention.
Yes,
and full attention.
And that's good. Now let me throw you a little curveball, as Ron Adams likes to say. Where has he commanded this silence?
In heaven.
In heaven, where all the people there have already come to him and already with him. So he is calling.
Commanding worship.
Well, that's a good guess. But what is God commanding from the people of heaven to stop and think about? That's right. That's what he's doing. He's calling attention of the people in heaven to, what about us? What about is he commanding their attention to?
Let's hear what they have to say. I've created them. They're important to me.
The importance to God. The importance to God. He's leaving this deep, profound silence to lay on heaven for a whole half hour, which may be a million years up there, to just say, okay, let's take a time before we proceed to do what? We are all going to focus everything we have on the needs of those people down there to understand what we're doing. Go ahead.
This week in Hebrews, it talks about the great cloud of witnesses.
That's a good parallel, too, because it's talking about the angels are up there, the saved are up there, as well as these crazy four creatures that live up there. They're all up there looking down on us. And that's what he's calling attention to, because that was a whole purpose of this creation. It wasn't to create people who can accomplish great things, or people can prove how brilliant they are, or prove how righteous they are. It was all for focusing people on him and taking aware of the spirituality. So what you see then, this angel in verse 3 comes with a golden censer, stands at the altar, and he given much incense to offer with the prayers of God's people on the golden altar in front of the throne. So what is he doing? He burns this incense in the prayers as a special burnt offering. He's offering something to God as a burnt offering.
The incense is worship and praise, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's, that's right. And specifically in the Old Testament, it's considered the parallel of prayer. Because incense, when you burn incense, where does this go?
Up in the atmosphere.
Watch it go up, and after a while, you can't see it anymore. Because where has it gone? It's gone up to God. And that's what happens to a burnt offering like this. You see what's burnt now it dissipates because God can't see it in this physical realm. And that's what has happened here. The smoke and the prayers went up before God from the angel's hand. Now the angel, did the angels have to do that so that God wouldn't get it, wouldn't hear us?
If they don't do that, we're in trouble, right?
Right. Well, what's the reason why the angel is taking the time to do this? What is that showing?
For us, it's important for us to know where they're going and our prayers are going to God.
Exactly. It's showing us, hey, they're going to get there. They're going to get there. Don't worry about that because they're going to be heard. And the angels, the people in heaven, are going to do their part. Because it's not just that they're all sitting by idly waiting for God to take care of it. They are all with him. They are all on the same mentality that he has to look down and take care of us. So we have the next thing, once the prayers are heard. Jennifer, could you look up Psalm 141 for a minute? We'll come to it. I'll get to you in a minute. The things that he says here, once the prayers go up to God's hands, the angel does something next. He has that censer in his hand that he's burning a sacrifice. What does he do with it?
He hurls it down to earth. He throws it
like a big javelin, throws it down to the earth to show, okay, here was what God has asked me to do. Give you just the first two verses of Psalm 41.
Okay.
141, sorry. Yeah.
O Lord, I call to you. Come quickly to me. Hear my voice when I call to you. May my prayer be set before you like incense. May the lifting up of my hands be like the evening sacrifice. Set a guard over my mouth, O Lord. Keep watch over the door of my lips. Let not my heart be drawn toward evil, to take part in wicked deeds with men who are evildoers. Let me not eat of their delicacies.
So that's as a parallel of what we just saw, of the prayers being forwarded, so to speak, to God. Because he's calling out, he's crying out for a need. And what is he asking God to do with his prayers is hear it. When would he like God to hear it? When it gets through the mail?
No, now.
No. He wants it heard now. And he wants you to hear him now. Please let my prayer be set before you like incense. May the lifting of my hands be like the evening sacrifice. Consider it, please, God, because that's a sacrifice of praise, as Hebrews 13 tells us. And he says, please help me because I have many dangers, many things that will always lead me astray. But verse 8, my eyes are fixed on you, Sovereign Lord, and you I take refuge. Do not give me over to death. So this is the imagery that they're seeing confirmed in heaven here. And when this censer or javelin are hurled down to earth, what is the response that comes from it? What do you see when there's lightning and thunder and rumblings and everything's shaking, and it's kind of, well, most of that is not yet anything happening except a lot of lightning and thunder and rumblings. But what does that call attention to on the earth? What's telling us down here? Well, that's true. That's what one thing it says, we're not in control. It does have a positive lesson to it, though, too. What is that saying down here when God's angel has hurled that down here and it just shakes things up a bit and gets our attention? What is he saying? Yes, I heard. Exactly. He's heard you. And what is God's response to hearing us then? When he hurls that down and he shakes up the earth, he's heard that he is going to reach out to this earth once more, over and over again, to shake us up and show us the way to him. Now, the trumpets that are being introduced here, that they are little different from the seals, but the God's message, when you look at this, it's never a punishment for punishment's sake. All the things that God lets happen here, even the things that he initiate, it's never a punishment for punishment's sake. It's always for the same thing. to communicate with us, to please notice what's going on there. Please take a real look at your world, because you have a need for me. You live in a world that's a dangerous place. It's a hazardous place. So know what it looks like, and unfortunately, some of the callous things that Christians say about bad things to happen down here, it's never for punishment. It's never taking vengeance on people. God doesn't do that. God has always called out for every soul down here. He knows, though, that we have to be given some firm warning sometimes. We have to be reminded. That's the way this world is down here, because this is not your home. Now, the trumpets and the seals, just to show a little bit of a difference here, we said the seal is, what was the word? It's still written up here. Revealing, right? It's to reveal. And what was the form that the dangers the seals unleashed? What kind of form, or what kind of dangers or evil words? Where did those things come from? Came from our hearts, right? The bad things in our hearts. The human aggression and violence and hatred and jealousy. It reveals the dangers that come from within humans. Well, the trumpets, what kind of a presentation, just don't worry about it's in them for a second, but when a trumpet is blown, what does that suggest? What's happening when you hear a trumpet blown?
An announcement.
Yeah. Announcement.
Pay attention.
That's right.
Big,
yeah, it's coming. Okay, here's an announcement. Ta-da! And so you have whatever comes up. So they are announcing or proclaiming something. Unfortunately, my cortex isn't processing hand movements very well, so you'll have to assume that what it says. But the things that it's doing here is it's revealing the fragility of the world. That's what we're going to see. They are going to present the fragility of the world itself. See, we saw, maybe just back up a second, with the seals revealed what bad about the world? What is filled with? Evil that comes from our hearts, from human hearts, from humans' unfortunate desire to hurt each other and oppress each other. Well, the fragility of the earth is going to come from a different place, because it's going to say it doesn't necessarily even have to come from you humans, because this world is a fragile place. So let's take a peek now. They pick up in Revelation in verse 7. We'll read the rest of the chapter now. Lloyd, can you take this?
Okay. The first angel sounded his trumpet, and there came hail and fire mixed with blood, and it was hurled down upon the earth. A third of the earth was burned up, a third of the trees were burned up, and all the green grass was burned up. The second angel sounded his trumpet, and something like a huge mountain, all ablaze, was thrown into the sea. A third of the sea turned into blood. A third of the living creatures in the sea died. And a third of the ships were destroyed. The third angel sounded his trumpet, and a great star, blazing like a torch, fell from the sky, and on a third of the rivers and on the springs of water. The name of the star was Wormwood. A third of the waters turned bitter. Many people died from the waters that had become bitter. The fourth angel sounded his trumpet, and a third of the sun was struck, a third of the moon, and a third of the stars, so that a third of them turned dark. A third of the day was without light, and also a third of the night. As I watched, I heard an eagle that was flying in midair call out in a loud voice, "Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, because of the trumpet blast about to be sounded by the other three angels."
Okay, thanks. This is a different point of view on the earth. Now, Phil, could you look up Ezekiel, and not read it right now, read it in a couple minutes. Look up chapter 5. I know you like this. We just talked about it a couple days ago. So look up verses 1 and 2 and 12. Just read 1 to 2 and skip to tell when to get there. Take a look now at the things that are happening here. What is being done to the earth here? What is happening in the world? What are some things you notice?
Being destroyed.
It destroyed.
It's only a third of it. It's in thirds.
That's right. That's a key. It's by thirds. And it's revealed against what aspects of the world? Is it now? Is this spiritual destruction?
Physical.
It's physical destruction.
Right.
It's things of the world that are being struck. Look what it is. What are some of the things that are being destroyed or damaged or hurt here? Just pick some out.
The grass,
trees, oceans, the fresh water, the sun and the moon.
Right.
There's one of the trumpets poisons the oceans. One of them poisons the fresh water and the rivers and the lakes. The sun and the moon are darkened. Those are all natural things. So the message here is a little different. It's saying this earth is a very fragile place. Because what it's saying, even if we all suddenly start behaving, what fate will we still face on this earth? We'd still die eventually, right? Because there's no end of it. So it's a different warning. Because it's saying that even if you are good, that doesn't exempt you from the dangers and suffering of this world. So that's the thing that he's trying to point out. And the point is, he's saying that there's physical danger and problems that we think of when we see, and we always think of them happening to
bad people.
Someone else. Someone else who somehow did something to deserve it. But not everyone bad suffers things. You and I will suffer bad things. Now, this Norma... Norma is an eagle spiritual eyesight, found the one-third formula that he means. It's the one-third, one-third, one-third format. This is a strategy or a tactic that Ezekiel used. Phil, read those verses in Ezekiel, just 1 to 2 and 12.
Now, son of man, take a sharp sword and use it as a barber's razor to shave your head and your beard. Then take a set of scales and divide up the hair. When the days of your siege come to an end, burn a third of the hair with fire inside the city. Take a third and strike it with a sword all around the city, and scatter a third to the wind. Why will pursue them with drawn sword? Verse 12. A third of your people will die of the plague or perish by famine inside you. A third will fall by the sword outside your walls, and a third I will scatter to the wind and pursue with drawn sword.
That's a example in Ezekiel. This was when the time of the Babylonian captivity. He was warning the people in Judah, this is going to happen, and what's going to happen to some of you? What? This, or this, or this. You're going to die of plague or famine when they're besieging you, or you're going to be just killed when they assault you, or if it's past those two, they're going to do what to you? They're going to take you to Babylon and enslave you. And that's the things that would face everybody. And what he's saying then, it's a little broader now here in Revelation. If you think that each of these times, he's always saying, one third of the earth will struck by that. One side of the earth will struck by that. One third of the earth will struck by that. What is he suggesting to us about the nature of this world's fragility?
Nobody's exempt.
That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. Because there's no place in the world where you can be safe. And sometimes people have these extended analysis of where they're going to live and where the safest place on earth is. Well, we don't live there because there's a lot of crime there. So I'm going to go here. Oh, wait, they have hurricanes there. That's a bad thing. There's no such thing as free of danger that you didn't do anything to deserve. That's the point. You don't do anything to deserve it, except that that's our nature because we're put down here to remind that we're not eternal things. So if you look... Okay, go ahead, Norma. It's judgment, although not in a condemnatory sense.
No.
It's in the sense of a very crucial, spiritually healthy warning, is what it is.
Well, I was just going to say, I think this is a really good book in terms of we don't like what it says, mm-hmm. but this is the way God created the world. I mean, because we saw in the seals where it talks about the human things, and that's the way God made the world. I mean,
yeah,
he made it
right.
with that idea of free will. And now we see the way he made the nature, you know, the second law of thermodynamics was very, very prevalent here in these scriptures. And I think we have to really wrestle with we don't like it. We don't want to accept it. But this is the way God has made the world.
That's right.
And he uses this kind of flowery word in Revelation, I guess, so that we can visualize it more, you know, like hurling fire or, you know, hail or fire. But, I mean, the message is the same. I mean, you could just say it in a couple of really simple words. But I think at least for me, I have to come to the grips that this is the way God created the world. I don't like it, but I can't escape it.
That's a very good point, because if you remember that you have to hear it in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
Because you're going to see something and you may not want to hear it, so he's going to try a different way, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Some of you maybe said, you see a sign once, this world is inherently fragile and dangerous. Some of you may say, okay, I'll take his word for it and I'll be pour caution from now on. But most of us don't.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us don't do that. So he's got to provide some imagery or logic or a lot of other things. Go ahead, Frank.
Well, the trumpets warn. These, I think, are warnings to people who have been relying on things of this world rather than relying on God.
That's right. That's exactly what it is. Because that's exactly what he's saying, even to you and me. This is not a safe place. You won't deserve what's going to happen to you. You won't. And that's the thing. Because maybe some of us live for long periods of our life in outward peace, outward content, outwardly enjoying the place. It's not going to last. Because even if you manage to avoid every little escape and every little curse along the way, someday happens. Is going to die. That's all there is to it, and it won't help you how much you enjoyed yourself here. You won't benefit then from enjoying yourself. You won't benefit them from how much suffering you avoided down here. And that's the truth. Is we have to hear the truth about the world, as there are evils that we're going to inflict on each other, and there are evils waiting for us that we're not ever going to have any control over. We cannot control this. There's a silly old joke that sometimes in the falls around here. Do you know why the reason is that California has earthquakes and fires and Michigan has the Wolverines? Do you know why that is?
No.
Because California got to pick first. So that's the thing, is you can't ever get away from things. Now see, you can think about going out in Hawaii, where we're going to have a lovely pleasure paradise. Well, what are you going to face out there? You're going to face volcanoes, you have tidal waves, you have all kind of horrible things that any minute can crush it. So no matter how together your life looks and feels to you, you will never take any lasting satisfaction from it in eternity. You very well enjoy it for a long time, but it's there to be taken just for now. Now, Karen, could you look Luke 9, 23 to 25? We'll get there in a minute. But the things that he's saying is things that have been commented on by some very wise philosophers. Spinoza, the medieval or Renaissance philosopher, used to talk about our reaction to human action, such as we saw in Revelation 6. When we look at the world and we see people who are filled with violence, immorality, hatred, anger, we always look at them, and what responses want to summon from your heart? You want to get angry with them, don't you? You want to hate them. You want to just, or maybe you won't hate them, but you're just going to be disgusted by them. You're going to just think they're so loathsome creatures that you're not going to give them a break. But that's not the best thing to do. He says, when you look at the sins of the world, do not laugh at them and do not be disgusted with them. Just take time to understand it. Well, that's a good point, isn't it? Because we have to understand what elicits sin. Because sin is never a rational behavior. Sin, as, and since you set me up, I'll re-quote Simone Weil, because Simone Weil says, every sin is an attempt to escape from emptiness, because we feel emptiness in our hearts. We all feel an emptiness that needs to be filled by God, but we don't want to be filled with God. We don't want God. We don't want only God. We want something to fill it. That's right. And so that's the cause of all sin in the world. We want something to fill us, and we're not willing to take God because it's not good enough. So we want something exciting, wants us something that will fill this surge of pleasure and good feeling or excitement. And so God won't ever do that. And so we have a bit of it, and we've got to grab more and more from the world. So thank you for promoting the stage for that quote.
I'm going to Paul 1:39, that says, am I not supposed to hate what God hates?
Well, that's a good point, because he's not saying hate and want to punish. He says, that's exactly what it is. He's appalled by it. He's disturbed by it. It torments God to see it.
It's a poor choice of words.
Right. God does not hate anybody. Now, he may hate the acts, but not because he loathes the people. Yet this, he is so tormented by what we do to each other. He's so tormented by our twisted desires, because he knows how much it hurts you. No more worse you hurt people, you're going to distort your own soul. And there's another quote, because this all tells us that we are going to have to go through a lot of suffering in this life if we want to approach God's throne. Because the closer you get to God, the more it's going to tune your sensitivity to what's really happening around you. Coming close to God will always come with that cost of sorrowing a lot more than you used to for this world. So that's just a little federally required warning, because that's what we're talking about. If you really see things from God's point of view more clearly, that will come, because you come to more sorrow and pain for the people here, because there are a lot of people in the world that suffer terribly that I bet you probably don't think of a whole lot. But there are probably people here who suffer a lot that you don't probably realize it either. There's an old quote from who? Simone Weil, of course. She said, there is a natural alliance between truth and affliction. Truth and affliction go together. Well, that's because, a different quote, she said, the need of truth is more sacred than any other need, yet it is never mentioned. But so she says, there's a natural alliance between truth and affliction, because both of them are mute suppliants, equal pleaders, mute pleaders, eternally condemned to stand speechless in our presence. Because we really have a strong resistance to the truth that God tells us. And we have an equal strong resistance to what? Affliction. We hate those both. We hate those both, because God is also reaching out to us, offering the truth, and it's going to come with some affliction. Because that's what Jesus did when he came here. He embodied truth, but he had to undergo a lot of affliction for our sakes. And so that is another perspective on this world. Now, let's point out something else to you, since we've got all into this kind of thing. In verse 13, we see this eagle flying in midair, and he calls out something.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. And so he says, boy, all this stuff we just heard about, those are terrible woes, isn't it?
It gets worse.
That's not what he said, is it? He said, whoa, 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 because where are these woes going
to
come? Because there are going to be three woes about to be announced. Now, that is the thing that we have to fear more than the fragility of the world and more than human evil. So, Karen, could you read Luke 9:23-25?
Then he said to them all, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. Whoever wants to save his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for me will save it. What good is it for a man to gain the whole world and yet lose his soul for his very self?
That's right. That is saying, where is the real woe in our life? Yeah. If you risk to lose your soul, if you risk separation with God, for anything that it would cost you in the world, this is not a good idea. No matter how you cherish this world, pleasures and distinctions and accomplishments and fun, it can never buy for you a moment of eternity with God. And that's what he's sharing with us. And it's offered very lovingly, very compassionately, and very truthfully, because he's saying, this is the first woe that's going to come up here. The fifth trumpet is going to pronounce the fifth woe. And we won't have time to read the whole thing. But Norma, could you read just the verse? Well, why don't you go? Why don't we read the whole thing? I know you'll stop. So, read the rest of the 9:1-2. Well, go to 12. Go to 12. That'll be good. That'll be a good place to stop. Now, this sounds like something very horrifying, apocalyptic, that these people could make crazy movies out of, but it's nothing of the sort. It is a far worse danger. It is a far bigger terror than that, because it's talking on a purely spiritual level. Now, these locusts, enjoy yourself for just a minute. What do these locusts look like? They got scorpions. They got what? A stinger. Yeah, stinger. The locusts don't have that, but these guys have a stinger. What are the parts of animals do they have? Yeah, they got horse parts, lion parts, all these things. Just you see if Hollywood ever took care of this, they just that's good. They just play it up in all these disastrous scenes. Well, what is that saying to us? That is encapsulating our full nature, what we are. Because these are stinging, because they are opening up the torment of the soul, the self-torment of the soul. Who started all this?
That angel.
A dead star, who is the destroyer, Apollyon, or Satan, who came down here. And he was given a key to what?
The abyss.
The abyss. Opening up the pit of hell, which is our souls, which they come be. And open up to release everything horrifying that's in here. And this goes along with what we have been reading. This is the most serious danger you'll face, because it will torment your soul. It will take you on a dead path that will lead you someplace. So these locusts who sting, it says they're not allowed to kill anybody, but they can torture you all the time, because you'll be tortured all the time with your struggle for sin, your craving to be self-important, to be self-accomplished, self-independent. You'll always crave those, but it will torment you because you can never really achieve those things. It will call you to struggle your temptations, the things that torment your soul, hit the cravings of your flesh. And so it says that the agony they suffered was like that a sting of a scorpion and with strikes. During those days, people will even seek death, but will not find it, because if they long to die, but death will elude them. And the only thing that will save you from this, in the verse 4, will be what?
Jesus.
seal of God on your forehead.
Oh, right, right.
That will, again, will protect you from what? Fear. It will deliver you from that self-torment, because you will be purified of your sin. You will still sin, you will make mistakes, but you will still be delivered from it. Because this is the thing he will do to you. Because the peace of the world gives, as Jesus said in John 14, I give you peace, but not the kind of peace the world gives you. It's not going to be quiet and calm all the time, but it's going to be the peace in what? One thing it always promises, we can be at peace with God. We can always know that God has accepted us once for all. God has graced us. We could always go with him anytime. That's a peace that he offers us. And so that's a promise that he makes. The sting of sin, 1 Corinthians 15. So the sting of death is sin. Because that's the sting of death. That's what death stings you with. Because when you're here, when you are going to die in a very short period of time, which whether it's 50 years is still a very short time, you're going to be stung with what? The regrets, the cravings. Got to get it all now. Got to get everything I want now, because I've only got 50 years to get it. Well, now I'm down to only 40 years to get it. Now I really got to scramble. Now I'm down to 20 years. I really got to scramble. Really got to get all the things they want. You know, as you're doing that, suddenly find your time might even be short than you thought. And it's all a prayer to us, a call to us, an appeal to us to focus your values of this world, because there are only a few things that can ever give you real hope in your heart, that can really hope, show you something that will always sustain you. Hebrews 2:14 says, because he was made like his children, he helped them to overcome the fear in their hearts that death gives them, because that's the only thing that can help us to go on. Now, a preview of the two other woes here, because this is all a section and we're kind of stopping in the middle of it, a complex version. We're going to see the second woe next time, the end of chapter 9. This is a different view on a different threat to the torment of the soul. And that is the greatest woe there is, tormenting the soul. That's the worst thing you can ever face. There are seven thunders in chapter 10, verse 4. And when the seven thunders spoke, I was about to write. But I heard a voice from heaven say, what did it say? Seal up the seven thunders have said, and do not write it down. So how can he find that out? You can't. So that, but we will next week, though, we will find out why we can't find it out. We can't find out what the seven thunders said, but next week I'll explain why we can't find that out, because it refers to something very important that we're not allowed to know. So I'll give you that next week. So even though that's seven thunders, and then this little scroll that communicates a special aspect of our lives here. We'll look at next time too. The two witnesses that are an image for our role in this world. We'll talk about that next week. It was verse 13. And then there's the third woe, which, except for the third woe, may or may not be a woe to you. The third woe can be a great thing to you if you're close to God. If you seek God, the third woe can actually turn out to be pretty good. But it could be a very bad woe for people who aren't seeking God. And it's all laid out for that God's the same desire above all. Now, we'll get to Psalm 18 in a minute, but the quick mythology trivia. In Greek mythology, there's a thing called Pandora's box. Now, you know who Pandora is or was? Pandora was the first woman on Earth. She was sent to Earth in Greek mythology. She was sent to Earth with this box that she was told, that has everything that belongs in the world. Take it down there. And so she went down there. She was obviously newly made, filled with innocence. And so she went down there and she gave it to the men who were there. And they, oh, sure, looks good. Let's open it up. Well, a lot of things come out of it that aren't very good, but they are exactly what we read about the horses. It's essentially a parallel to the basic perspective God has, that human life human capacity, human ingenuity can be good or bad. It's all how you use it. Fill the world with good things and it filled it with terrible evils. And all the things in the box escaped. And what was found at the bottom? Only one thing was found at the bottom of the box when everything left. So do you think it was death? Do you think it was hope? Do you think it was fate? Or happiness? Or success? Well, it's not necessarily death, because you may suffer, but you don't have to die spiritually. It's certainly not happiness and success. Those are useless things. Even the old Greeks knew that. It's not fate, because you're not condemned to fate either. It's hope. That's what I found at the bottom of her box. After all these things got unleashed, all they had left was hope. Just we could put our hope in something. The difference for us is we can put our hope in something that is real, that is live. It's not physical, but it's a spiritual God who will be there for us, we know. He is the only thing who can deliver us. He is the only thing who can truly protect us in our heart at all times. Psalm 18, we'll read a little bit of this and I'll let you go. But Psalm 18 calls us to think about the needs we have from God, and it gives a lot of imagery that I think is very beautiful imagery about God personally taking the responsibility of reaching out to us, not to protect us for every little thing down here, but always protect our soul, always keep it with Him. Starting in verse 3, I call to the Lord, who is worthy of praise, and I have been saved from my enemies. The cords of death entangled me. The torrents of destruction overwhelmed me. The cords of the grave coiled around me. The snares of death confronted me. In my distress, I called to the Lord. I cried to my God for help. From his temple, he heard my voice. My cry came before him into his ears. The earth trembled and quaked. The foundations of the mountains shook. They trembled because he was angry. Smoke rose from his nostrils. Consuming fire came from his mouth. Burning coals blazed out of it. He parted the heavens and came down. Dark clouds were under his feet. He mounted the cherubim and flew. He soared on the wings of the wind. He made darkness his covering, his canopy around him, the dark rain clouds of the sky. Out of the brightness of his presence, clouds advanced with hailstones and bolts of lightning. The Lord thundered from heaven. The voice of the Most High resounded. Down to verse 20. The Lord has dealt with me according to my righteousness. According to the cleanness of my hands, he has rewarded me. For I have kept the ways of the Lord. I am not guilty of turning from my God. All his laws are before me. I have turned not away from his decrees. Verse 25. To the faithful you show yourself faithful. To the blameless you show yourself blameless. To the pure you show yourself pure. And I could read a lot more. I'll encourage you to read a little bit more on your own. It won't hurt you any. But this is the image that he provides us, is all you have to do is call out to him. No matter what you've been doing, no matter what you've done wrong, just call out to him in humility and reverence and submission to what he tells you. Because this is a message you always offer to everyone. It doesn't matter what's going on in the world around you. Don't bother to interpret what it means and what it says is going to happen, because it all means the same thing. Everything bad happens here always says the same thing. Please call out for God. That's all it always says to you. Call out for God. Be with God. That's all it says. All the things that he gives you is always another way of saying, call to God. Get safer than now, because you won't always have it so easy. And that's a message he always proclaims, and that's the book of Revelation. That's what he keeps telling us. He's revealing this is what this world is all about, because it is a grand expression of God's love to reach down here to us little fragile people and call to us from his heart and offer us to come and be with him in his glory forever. God will let you go. Thank you so much for your patience, and we'll continue next time.